From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. It is never easy to get Congress to pass a bill into law, but this year's Congress is the most unproductive Congress in at least 60 years. In the first 6 months, the 113th Congress has passed only 22 bills through the House and Senate. Imagine what it's like for the rest of those bills.
I'm just a bill. Yes, I'm only a bill. And I got as far as Capitol Hill. Well, now I'm stuck in committee. And I'll sit here and wait while a few key congressmen discuss and debate whether they should let me be alone.
Yeah, that's the fate of most bills in Congress. They sit around and wait. So what's the holdup? Colorado Governor John Hickenlooper says the push for transparency in government in recent years is making government and lawmakers less effective. His solution? Bring back closed-door meetings and earmarks. Julian Zelizer is a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University, the author of Jimmy Carter and Governing America. Julian, thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Is this lack of action in Congress just the usual democratic process, or is there something more serious here, something more gridlock?
Well, Congress never works well. It's rare when Congress does produce a lot of legislation. So the question shouldn't be, you know, why isn't Congress working? But we should look at periods when it does work and see what's different. That said, we are in a period that's worse than the bad periods. And part of it's polarization, part of it's the way campaign finance works, and part of it is, correctly, how earmarks have gone away, how a lot of this is done in sunshine makes some of the democratic process even more difficult than before.
Is the nature of, so the nature of the gridlock today is different than the nature of gridlock in the past?
Absolutely. So in the early 1960s, gridlock came because of bipartisanship. So Southern committee chairmen who were Democrats teamed up with Republicans from the Midwest, and they wouldn't let bills on civil rights and bills for unions and other kinds of domestic issues leave committee. So the problem then was bipartisanship. Today, the problem is partisanship. So there was just different kinds of obstructions in different periods.
There also has been kind of a breakdown in party strength, it seems to me. Is that part of what's going on here, that the leaders of the parties don't have the kind of control they had in an earlier era, say the era of Lyndon Johnson?
Well, there's some truth to that. Although back then, you know, the people who really ran the parties weren't the Speaker of the House or the Majority Leader. It was the committee leaders. Then the parties had different kinds of weaknesses. Today, party leaders have campaign PACs, for example, that can keep people disciplined. So, again, different challenges rather than an easy period versus a difficult period.
Now, we associate transparency with something we'd like to have in government. We'd like to see what's going on, to see the inner workings, to make it public to us. But does Governor Hickenlooper of Colorado have a point when he says the push for transparency is having the unintended result of helping to create gridlock?
Well, I think there is some truth to that. Obviously, we don't want to go back to a period where there's no accountability and everything's done behind closed doors. But the legislative process is messy, and there does need to be some space for members of both parties to at least try to work out deals before the interest groups jump all over them, before the activists know what happens. And if there's absolutely total transparency or there's very little room for backdoor negotiations, I do think it makes the congressional process that much harder. If Politico is going to report on what you're doing in real time, there's less likelihood that you're going to reach a deal that's unpalatable to your own party but might be necessary for the national good.
We're talking about the unproductive Congress. I guess we could be having this conversation just about any year, but it is particularly unproductive this year. I'm speaking with Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton. Julian, give us an example of how transparency might be slowing down or limiting legislation.
Well, you know, as the budget negotiations have gone on really since 2012, but certainly with all the discussions over the so-called fiscal cliff, most of the negotiations were literally reported as they happened. You heard what Mitch McConnell was saying in the Senate. You heard what Speaker Boehner was trying to do with members of the Tea Party Republican caucus within his own party. And those budget negotiations were very difficult. But because this was all coming out immediately, activists immediately responded. They immediately pushed back when either Republican leader tried to break a deal with the White House. And as a result, most of the deals, you know, fell apart. And the result was sequestration. And so that's an example where transparency might not have the kind of effects that we want.
But, Julian, why do these political leaders make these statements in public rather than having a quiet coffee somewhere and discussing it offline?
Well, some of it is obviously intentional, but I'm not sure where the offline is anymore. A lot of leaks come from staffers. Reporters are very good. It's not simply the old newspaper print format, which was very slow. With blogging and with online resources, it's very easy to get information out there, even from a source that might not be the most credible source. And so I think a lot of it is just there's not a lot of space to do that anymore. And leaders don't even trust each other. We've kind of hit a point where even within their own party, they're leery of trying to have that discussion because one of the two people at that table might then go and release the information and, you know, hurt the other.
Now, earmarks are those things added to bills. It would provide federal funding for a lawmaker's pet project and perhaps win that lawmaker's allegiance to the larger bill. John Boehner banned them back in 2011. How has this changed the legislative process?
Well, I think that did hurt the legislative process. I do think Congress has always depended on earmarks or what was called pork barrel spending, different names for similar things. And, you know, members of Congress are elected officials, so what matters to them very much is that their voters like them. And the way in which members of the House or Senate always guaranteed that was by delivering money back to their districts. And it's one thing to try to ban earmarks for random lobbyists, but it's another to prohibit or to really constrain legislators of getting part of federal legislation to deliver money and projects to their districts. That's always been very useful to leaders. When Lyndon Johnson was the Senate Majority Leader, that's the kind of money he relied on to get people to vote for things they otherwise wouldn't vote on. It's very necessary to make the machinery run smoothly. So without that, the more we limit that and take that money away, the legislative leaders have one less tool to try to persuade people to vote their way.
Well, it certainly helps to grease the skids with that stuff from the pork barrel to get lawmakers to go along and come to some kind of agreements. But, of course, the counterargument that was used is this: it's so inefficient and it's such a waste of money to just throw these projects in unexamined. And the cost of that is just too much. It sounds as though you think it's worth the cost of that.
Well, again, there have to be limits. There have to be constraints. But I do think some of that inefficiency has a value. And, you know, maybe if we didn't have sequestration as our way to deal with the budget, people would say, well, some earmarks are okay if this wasn't the result, if Speaker Boehner had been able to move people of his own caucus. So those inefficiencies, which often do bring money to real citizens, to real projects and communities, getting rid of that has some broad political effects, which are extremely consequential.
So, but how do you set up a rule that defines bad pork and good pork, Julian?
Well, certainly there has to be some accountability into what the money is going for. So if a money is going to a project, it has to be a project that does something somewhat valid. It has to build a bridge to somewhere, not a bridge to nowhere. The government has oversight. Congress has oversight on all kinds of projects that the executive branch does, and it could figure out ways to oversee this kind of spending within reason. It would never be perfect. A lot of it's going to be messy. Congress is a messy institution, but I do think that money is important to the overall project of having our democratic process work.
What's going to make this change, Julian Zelizer? Is it something that will happen within the entire body? Is it a different kind of leadership? Is it a change in power? How will this become work better?
Well, you know, one thing that can happen is a genuine crisis. We started by saying Congress never works very well, but if it ultimately fails to respond to some big issue, some big crisis, some economic crisis that we face, there could be a lot of pressure to reform the way Congress works. If Congress sits still and we fall into some kind of economic depression, there'd certainly be pressure on the political institution to do something. The other way in which it happens without a crisis is for voters to translate, you know, polls that say they don't like Congress into political pressure on members to do something about it, to figure out reforms, whether it's earmarks or some kind of spending to other types of reforms that will change the way politics works. Voters have a lot of power. So crisis, voters, those are the sources of change in our political system.
Julian, every time I have a congressman on the air and I ask them about this, they just shake their head and they go, tut, tut, tut. Yes, it's gridlock there and we really have to change our ways. But do you see any evidence of that actually happening, particularly on these issues that we just discussed? You said maybe there should be some earmarks allowed. Maybe there should be a little less transparency. Is anyone really acting on those ideas?
Not right now, but, you know, there are periods in the 1970s, for example, Congress undergoes a huge number of reforms. So that's when a lot of our sunshine rules come into effect, where hearings and a lot of deliberations are held in public. That's when Congress starts to allow television cameras onto the chamber floors and puts into effect ethics rules. It's all in response to scandals, ranging from Watergate to congressional scandals, in a sense that the institution is not working. And it really changes the way the House and Senate work, some of it resulting in unintended problems. But reform is possible. We have had moments of reform, substantive reform, and it's too limited to say we would never see that again.
Yeah, I just hope it doesn't take a giant scandal or crisis to do it. Julian Zelizer, thank you so much for speaking to us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Julian Zelizer, professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. His books include Jimmy Carter and Governing America. I'm Ross Reynolds. It's KUOW.